So we're going to go to our other story. Just about every week, we look through the pages of the Washington Post Sunday magazine for interesting stories about the way we live now. But what we found this week instead was a story about the way we die, at least the way some of us die. In a city of monuments commemorating famous people, places, and events, freelance photographer Lloyd Wolf has decided to document street memorials, these unofficial, seemingly spontaneous constructions of toys, photos, balloons, and beer cans that friends and family assembly to honor the dead, usually victims of violence. Lloyd Wolf and Washington Post reporter Lynae O'Neill Parker joined up in a compelling and heartbreaking photo essay on these memorials, and they're here with me in the studio to talk about it. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having
me. I was thinking about this, that you know, we see them, but we don't see them. If you live in certain parts of the country, you will see these everywhere, but we don't always see them. So, Lloyd, I'd like to ask you, how did you start to see these to the point where you wanted to photograph them?
It came from that I've been mentoring a young man for many years in D.C., who was a formerly homeless person. And he had four of his relatives killed in 13 months. And I saw what it began to do to him, the impact of the murder, that he became depressed, he became difficult. He was in grief. And I started seeing the shrines around in the neighborhoods he lived in southeast D.C., and began to understand them for what they are.
What are they?
They are outpourings of hope, grief, honor, memory, creative memory. They're completely homemade. Someone doesn't tell you how to make one. It's completely heartfelt. And again, I wanted to, at first, just there was no conscious effort to document them as a project.
Lynae, I'm going to bring Lynae in for a second, and if you're going to, we're going to take a short break and then hear from both of you again. Lynae, just briefly, you write in your essay that the memorials spring from a collective will that could not save the dead and now offers eulogy and demands justice in fake fur. How do you understand these shrines?
Just as an overwhelming cry of anguish and recognition, a demand for everything, for atonement, for, as Lloyd said, memory, justice. The voice was what captured me. I looked at the pictures and I deliberately went someplace solitary. I didn't even look at them as I was getting the assignment. I went to an office so I could just sit down with them. And what came out were just these cries, these voices. You hear normally the point of impact. That's when it makes the news. But this is the lingering effects. And these are people saying, we are here. We are grieving. We demand that something be done or someone take notice. And that's the effect of the memorials, because after all, they linger. They last sometimes for years. And so that really was what just screamed at me from these pictures.
Freelance photographer Lloyd Wolf and Washington Post reporter Lynae O'Neill Parker are with us in our Washington studio. We're talking about those spontaneous street memorials that seem to pop up with, I don't know whether it's alarming frequency or is it comforting frequency in many cities around the country. We're going to continue our conversation about memorials after a short break. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just about every week, we look through the pages of the Washington Post Sunday magazine for interesting stories about the way we live now. We're visiting with Lloyd Wolf and Washington Post reporter Lynae O'Neill Parker. They joined up to put together a compelling photo essay on street memorials that we see throughout the Washington area and indeed throughout the country. Lloyd, do you have any idea how this custom got started?
No. To be honest, I have some guesses. You didn't see them 20 years ago. Occasionally you'd see one along a roadside. I have some guesses how some pieces of the ones you see, particularly in Washington, come about. I think there's a fair bit of traditional African-American imagery that shows up, particularly with the expensive liquor bottles and the images of the libation of people gathering to pour them out. The bright colors.
An African custom.
Yes, an ancient, West African custom. And the bright colors, the combination of tremendous celebration in a way, and the grief you see. Sometimes I've seen Bibles and liquor bottles in the same shrine. It's an odd combination, but you see a whole range of emotional output. People's whole hearts get poured into them.
When you travel around the country, often when someone dies in a traffic accident, you'll see a roadside mm-hmm. marker. Are these different from those?
Yes. They're different regionally and ethnically. You know, what you see, the Latino ones and the Asian ones I've seen look different. I saw one in Hawaii. It has Lays, you know, from Hawaii. But D.C. has its own look. It sounds odd, but no one teaches you how to build them, so they come from the local culture. The ones you see along the roadside, in general, look more like what you'd see at a cemetery. They're flowers, they're crosses. They're usually a little quieter, with some exceptions. The ones in the city tend to be quite bold statements.
You think that the purpose is to say, I'm here, see me, see that this happened, or pay attention.
Yeah, essentially. And I think there are cases where the only memory that a poor family has is this shrine. They may not be able to afford a marker, so this is the way they do it.
Lena, you said in the article that many times these memorials are fleeting, but some are carefully maintained. Tell us about the memorial to Little Bo. It's been here for 3 years.
Right. The one for 19-year-old Little Bo, is maintained in an alley behind a Northeast Washington nightclub, and you've got empty liquor bottles that have been arranged in a circle, and apparently Little Bo's friends gather on the anniversary of his death to, as Lloyd mentioned, drink, pour out libations, reminisce. In that way, they are very living. I look at them as folk art, but it's also very very current. So you have the shrine that they erect, but they keep adding to them. They freshen them up, perhaps seasonally, with Little Bo, as I say, on the date of his anniversary. So in that way...
I mean, the anniversary of his death.
Right, the mm-hmm. anniversary of his death. So in that way, they are keeping this person's memory alive in a way that, you know, people used to go to cemeteries. Well, this is an extension of that or a replacement of that. Perhaps these folks aren't going to go to the cemetery and commemorate in the same way. This is sort of celebrating his life in the street, in the same manner that he lived it. And so that's what gives it an added texture and an added dimension. They're folk art. They're folk expressions, very organic. And I think that's part of why they spoke to me, too, as I was looking at the pictures. Like everybody else, I'm driving to work and I rush past. But they really force you to take note, even in a fleeting way, for a moment. As soon as I'm driving past, I say, something happened here.
One of the more recent memorials or shrines is to the daughters of four mm-hmm. murdered sisters, the children of a woman named Benita Jacks, who is charged with killing her girls and hiding their decomposing bodies for months. It's a terrible story. We've talked about it on this program in the context of, you know, how can we help a mother in distress if we see that she's in distress, but we don't know what to do. But Lloyd, tell me about this shrine, and what is it that strikes one about it?
Well, this one was different. It wasn't erected by family members, obviously. It was erected by the neighborhood. In fact, there was a candlelight vigil there the day after I did pictures. It was a very large shrine. I talked to a couple of women who were adding to the shrine. It's almost like they're contributing to an alms box, you know, or a collection plate. You know, they brought, and I've been to a couple shrines as they're being put up, and this was, you know, maybe 2 or 3 days after the news broke.
Which I have to tell you, one other thing that takes me down are the stuffed animals. The stuffed animals that mm-hmm. are a constant feature mm-hmm. of these sites. And is it because, Lloyd, do you think it's because these are children? We often see them when these are, it's just a sign that there are just too many children in the city who meet violent deaths? Because you often see them at the sign of where there are young men who've been killed. What do you think that says?
I think this is a guess. Because I've asked, but, you know, people say that's what you do. But I think they're seen as safe. You know, there are images of innocence, and there's nothing dangerous about a plush toy, and they're colorful, almost they have a floral quality when you see them en masse, and that's my guess.
Linnaeus, you're a mother also, and are there any of these that just strike you to your core?
The Jacks one I found was particularly moving as you spoke with all the teddy bears. That also felt to me almost like an attempt for atonement by the community, because after all, they were there and for whatever reason were unable to take notice as this was happening, were unable to save the kids. But also Deontay Rawlings, I have to say that was the most visceral for me, because you have the teddy bears and liquor bottles juxtaposed with this picture of this really, this baby-faced teenager. And immediately I began this ache. I was like, oh, you know, he was far too young to drink. He was too young for everything that happened to him, was the point.
Let's just tell people what the story, if you're not from Washington, this is not a story that would necessarily, you'd necessarily be aware of, that this a 14-year-old was shot by an off-duty D.C. police officer last September. The facts of this case are very much in dispute.
Right.
He is believed to have, I think he was believed by the officer who to have stolen something and to have shot at him. And some of the neighbors say that they don't know. A weapon has not been found, but it's clear that somebody fired shots at this officer. It isn't clear who did. So anyway, this is a matter that is being sort of investigated.
Right.
It's a very traumatic one for the city.
And in the shrine, though, all you see is the loss. In the shrine, there are... What you come away from is whatever the facts in dispute, here's this 14-year-old who is no longer here, and his promise, his future, and the tragedy are all juxtaposed in the way that these things are arranged. And again, with the pictures, and there's also a picture of him as a baby, and the youth, the youngness, this promise snuffed out is what just grabs you by the throat. As I say, in a way that you linger over them. Sometimes as we're running about our day, we don't have a chance, or we don't take the time, or it's just too much of a psychic tax on us because we're driving past and, you know, you don't want to stop really and consider. Each of these is a story. Each of these marks a death. Each of these is a failure in some way, a community failure, a city failure, a personal failure.
Lloyd, is there... I don't know how many of these you've documented.
Between 60 and 80 over the last 5 years.
It's
hard for me to count them the way I've got them cataloged. I gave up counting at some point. I could figure it out.
Is there one that you can't get out of your mind?
Three or four of them. One that's around Deontay's, very much so, and I've actually seen video of him recently by an amazing fellow named Curtis Mosey. Has something called Tale of the Tape. So I saw pictures of him when he was growing up, video. Deontay's, I actually kind of lost it. I've been back to that shrine. Around the corner from Deontay, less than 200 feet, is another one to a 2-year-old girl who had this amazing name, Zion Destiny Walker, and she was allegedly killed by her mother's boyfriend. And I just lost it, a 2-year-old. And a very primitive shrine in terms of stuff, but it was so heartfelt. That one was hard.
Do you think that these are clearly expressions of grief, but in a way, are they not expressions of rage?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like shaking a fist in a way at the sky. Why this?
When you ask people, because I know you have, why they do this, what do they say?
I don't get coherent, you know, consistent answers, because they're all made individually. You know, no one goes to, like I said, a class to learn to do this.
It just seems to be something organic. People are called and moved to do it, and they don't even necessarily know why. You know, I'm thinking
some neighborhoods don't do them. Some mm-hmm. of the worst neighborhoods, deadliest neighborhoods, do not do them. And mm-hmm. some they're taken down very quickly, and some they're up for years. And I think it's become a community, like I said, 20 years ago, no one did these, and I think it's become a community norm.
I don't think this is exclusively, I think we see this largely in African-American neighborhoods and also some Latino neighborhoods, but I don't think it's exclusively so. I remember there were a couple of years ago, there was a young white teenager in a majority white neighborhood in Northwest Washington who was killed by a truck driver in an accident. He lost control of the car. And this was also, you know, another terrible story, should never have happened, and so forth. A shrine to this young man grew up in the spot where he was killed and was maintained for quite some time. Lene, what do you think that
means? We have needs for the need to have a collective memory, to mark an occasion, to say someone was here, someone who meant something, someone who had life. And so I think that every culture, of course, it's not exclusive to any one, the iterations, the renderings of those get specific in specific places. But every culture has this need to remember, to rage, to atone. You know, it's complicated and it's very layered. It's particularly interesting to me in Washington because we are a city of memorials, so, and monuments. And so these are the other monuments. I interviewed Professor James Young
of the University of Massachusetts.
And he was saying that these teddy bear memorials make the other memorials aspirational. The idea that here are the monuments, here's what we stand for, and it's cast in granite. But just, you know, just down the road, just on the other side of the city, here are these other memorials, and they show the imperfection. They're cast in teddy bears. They're cast in fluff. And they say, these other things are aspirational. We're trying to get there, but we're not there yet because look at the shrine to this two-year-old.
Lloyd, does anyone find it odd when you're in the community documenting these shrines? You're not African-American.
No. I'm Jewish.
And
not that that means you can't be African American.
Not that that means you can't be African American.
No,
that's true.
I'm not. I'm of German and Eastern European
descent.
Does
anyone ever wonder what you're doing there or why you care so much?
Yes, it's usually an easy question to answer. People have regularly, you know, why are you here with all the bears? What are you doing? You know, here I'm, you know, a white guy, look a little scruffy, a couple of big cameras, and they say, I said, and I usually say, here's, you know. I talk a little bit about Dion Johnson, the young man I mentor, and his situation. I'll say, look, you know, I see these shrines. This may be all that's left of the person, and I want to hold on to it some way. It's an act of preservation, and which the shrine itself is. And people kind of get it. And I'll usually ask, you know, did you know the person? And from that, and many times they do. They're in the neighborhood. And a story will come out. That's how I learned about the stuff with Little Bo. This lady started talking to me. The Jacks, sometimes people really want to let something out. The hardest ones are someone will look at me and, you know, it'll be a little kind of a rough-looking guy will come up, you know, and he'll look at me and I'll just ask him, did you know the fella? And I've seen tears or something close to tears. And they'll just kind of get what I'm doing from that point. The only rough moment I had was photographing a shrine that was actually just graffiti on a dumpster. It's a neighborhood I know. And I came out and some kind of rough-edged guys came around. I think, okay, here it comes. And one of them knew me. I used to take him to do rap music at a studio. He says, this cool, it's cool, it's Lloyd, you know. And I was like, hey, Marcus. Most people get it. You know, as soon as I explain what I'm doing, it's not about color. We're all, it's my community, too. There is one out in Annandale to a victim
Virginia.
Of the Virginia Tech. Yeah, Annandale, Virginia suburb. There's a long-standing memorial to one of the girls killed at the Virginia Tech massacre last spring.
What is in that memorial?
A picture of, as my memory of it, is there's photographs. There's some Christian religious objects, a large Hokies flag, the mascot flag. It looks different than the ones downtown. I mean, it looks more like a typical roadside shrine from an accident. But it's a lot of flowers. It seems to be well-maintained. It's obviously not on the site where it occurred. It must be in her neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Lene, after doing this piece, do you ever envision yourself participating in this custom? Have you been moved to bring flowers, a teddy bear, some acknowledgement?
I have been moved, not in a death that's touched me personally. As I say, because I know it's going to be painful until I was forced to look at them and ponder, consider them. And then when I did, there is such a heartfelt and human sentiment to want to remember and recognize and honor. And I could see myself, yes, very clearly saying, you know, it's not enough. We sing and we have, you know, a funeral and all that, but I want something here that lasts. I want something that's more. So I certainly, hopefully I'll never be touched by that kind of tragedy, but I certainly understand the impulse. And if I were, could see myself wanting to put up something. It's very spontaneous. It's very genuine. And in that way, I think it honors people.
Lene O'Neill Parker and Lloyd Wolf collaborated on a piece in this week's Washington Post Sunday magazine. The piece is called Streets of the Dead. And if you want to see the piece, read the piece, look at the photographs, we will have a link on our website. They were kind enough to join us here in our Washington studio. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having us.